Well, welcome along to another edition of the All Out Football Podcast with me, Will Luca, your host. And on this episode, we're back after a week. We're taking a bit of a break, the international break, of course. For many, sometimes it's boring. Others might be a little bit enthusiastic to watch England, but against Hungary the night, there are lots of talking points. But we're going to focus on the Premier League because the Premier League is back after the break. And joining me for this episode is Alex Wood, who writes about Newcastle, who is relatively a new member of All Out Football. We hope that he is writing lots of pieces on Newcastle in the future, whenever you can, Alex, of course. And we're also joined by a new member, Ollie Goodwin. Now, Ollie supports Swansea, but we're not talking about Swansea because they're in the Championship at the moment. Well, that's only funny. Just. But Swansea do play Cardiff this weekend in the Championship. That is the South Wales derby, but I'm sure we can talk about that another time. But for now, let's focus on the Premier League and some of the talking points from the last week. And of course, the big news is that Newcastle United are under new owners. Now, let me start off with you, Alex, because this is the reason why you're here, to talk about the new takeover of Newcastle United. First of all, your gut reaction must be, for lots of Newcastle fans, of course, I suppose it must be relief.
Yeah, 100%. I will say, as I've said to many publications and many places, I cried. I shed a tear. There was actual emotion that was shed. I was in the middle of my university library when the Sky Sports announcement came through at roughly 5:12 in the afternoon. I then opened my bag, got out a warm can of Carlsberg, opened it and drank it, and then went to the pub with my friends and celebrated. I know many people that were outside St. James's Park, and a couple of my mates like spoke to Sam Bender while he was there. He obviously is a boyhood Newcastle fan and now a huge musician, and was out there with his saxophonist of all people playing for everybody. But yes, to answer your original question, well, yes, relief, Mike Ashley is gone. Hope that this can be a start of something new. And yeah, it was a really, really big emotional day.
Well, 2007 was when Mike Ashley took the club over, took ownership of the club. And in that time, to be fair, there was a place in the Europa League. That was one point thing to point out. But two relegations to the Championship. That was the downside, of course. So I'll come to you in a second, Ollie. Alex, let's get the other issue out of the way. This is the ethics of things, because the Saudis now own one of our football clubs and are now officially the richest club in our country above Manchester City, which on the scale of things, considering we had the European Super League, which was obviously thrown into the dustbin, this is huge. And in a way, there are lots of talking points here to do with human rights, anti-LGBT, anti-women, and obviously they murdered a journalist in Jamal Khashoggi. So let's talk about the morals here, Alex. What do you think many Newcastle fans think about that? And I suppose it comes down to a point of whether they actually care or not. What's your feeling?
I'm morally conflicted because I care about human rights. Many of my friends belong to the LGBT community. Obviously, women's rights and issues are forefront in everyday life in 2021. I will flip it there and say the alleged murder, nothing's been proven yet by the Saudi Arabians. There are a lot of people convinced that it was the Crown Prince and the actual Saudi Arabian government that had something to do with the murder of the journalist, but nothing's been overly proven yet. So I don't want to get any legal people in trouble or do anything like that. But it is highly convinced that it is an actual thing that they have done. I'm conflicted, as I've already said, because morally, as a human being, I should hate these human beings. I should hate them all over. I should hate everything they stand for, and I do. We are all here for LGBT rights and obviously women's rights in 2021, as I've already said. So these people are evil. They're not good human beings. That saying, they have just taken over a football club and they are the richest clubs. We are the richest club in the world, not just the country, the world. And it's by a large amount now. It's not a small amount. It is a very, very large amount. So for me, and I know many other journalists that are Newcastle United fans, what we're trying to look at and go through is, should this have been allowed to happen? Now, the reason that it was happening and it was finally allowed to happen is because the sports broadcasting company, BN Sport, dropped its piracy rate against the Saudi Arabian government so that they were allowed to show BN Sport in there, so more Premier League football and more football could be shown legally in Saudi Arabia. And that was the main reason it was pushed through, and Richard Masters got it through with the Premier League. Now, Amnesty International, the human rights activists, have called a meeting with the Premier League to re-look at the owners and directors test. And if we can be something that foments that change in not only English football, but world football, and prevents future sports washing, which this is, we must say it is, then I'll be very much happy with that. When I go to Newcastle United games in future, which I will not be carrying a Saudi Arabian flag. I'll not be robing up. I will most likely not buy a shirt with the Saudi Arabian sponsor on, which we will have at the end of the season. Fun88.com, the Chinese money launderers and betting company, have agreed to stay on to the end of the season. So I will not buy a shirt with that stuff on. That's me personally. To answer another side of your question, Will, many Newcastle United fans, and I don't want to speak for them all, I'll speak for a fraction that I know, older ones really don't care. That's it.
So it's an age gap. It's a generation gap.
Not only is it a generation thing, but I would also imagine it's a football thing. They see football as that. It's football. What happens in the world happens in the world. But when you go down to that ground on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, you see your mates at 12, you go back home at 7, that's it. It's separate. They separate it completely. It's a church and state thing. We do it with politics. They do it with football. That's the way it works. They don't look at the two. That's how many Manchester City fans look at it. It's how many PSG fans look at it. It's how many Inter Milan fans look at it with their Chinese owners as well. It's how Newcastle United fans will look at it now. Me personally, I don't. But again, that's a conversation for a whole separate podcast, not just a Premier League wrap-up podcast like this one.
Ollie, let's come to you. I suppose that the argument that, don't bring politics into football, we don't like that. That argument's dead now. You can't say that politics in sport, we don't want to hear politics in sport, politics in football. That argument's gone. That's long dead because of this. I'm not saying it's not the fault of Newcastle fans. Of course it's not. But this is also a country that has given arms, our country, the UK, has given arms to Saudi Arabia to create a really hell in Yemen. Let's give that a bit of context as well. But let's move on to the football side of things. I think that's the most important thing. Ollie, the big question is Steve Bruce. Now, Steve Bruce as the manager, I'll come to you again, Alex, in a bit to get your thoughts on it. But where does Steve Bruce go from here?
Well, I think Steve Bruce leaves from here, to be totally honest. I think I can't see him being there long, because you just look at, you already look at kind of what these people have come in at the start and said, and they've said, like Alex, as Alex will show you. And I just want to make a quick point, as Alex was saying, I think, again, this is another situation where the Premier League and sort of the higher echelons of the Premier League and the systems that are in place to protect fans has once again completely failed, because there is just these poor, Newcastle fans, they've just got absolutely no control over this. And so for them, as much as they want to say this, that and the other, I'm going to be honest, the only thing that you can do as a Newcastle fan is try and be positive about it. You can obviously do the protesting and do whatever you can to show that you're not a fan of the ownership. But the reality is they've just got no control. What is this? What is a football club? Is it the players? Is it the fans? Is it the owners? Is it the whole sort of, St. James's Park? And it is now, obviously the culture is going to completely change. But I think coming back to what we were saying about Steve Bruce, I was looking at him, and they've obviously got this, he's 9:30 tomorrow, isn't it? He's doing the press conference. I just feel like he's, what's he going to say? He's going to sit at the front there. And it's like this giant elephant in the room. He's going to have to sit there and field questions about what he thinks the future of the club's going to be, what he thinks of the new ownerships, what he thinks of Amanda. Sorry, I'm going to try and not get Amanda Staveley, the new woman that's come in charge. She spoke to Steve Bruce. We all saw that angry video of him looking pretty bewildered, leaving the training ground. That sort of, you know, why is he leaving training at 11:30? Who's looking after the lads? You know, what's going on there? And so I hate to say it, but the writing's on the wall for him. You know, I can't see a situation where that's going to iron itself out and not turn slightly toxic. Because we know, you know, as Alex again will reinforce, we know what the Newcastle fans think about him. We know that there was no love lost between them. And I just think I think maybe he's being given a period of, you know, a token gesture of you can have, you know, a month, maybe even less, just to sort of show that we're not the worst people in the room, in the world. You know, maybe they're trying to promote themselves slightly here as well. But I think if we're being honest, he's on borrowed time now, isn't he?
Alex, Steve Bruce, as a manager, Newcastle haven't been relegated under him yet, of course. where do you see it? Do you see it? Obviously, I will ask you the question about who would be the next manager for Steve Bruce, because that's the question that lots of Newcastle fans will start asking, and what the owners, who they bring in. But surely he deserves his 1,000th game in management as a Premier League manager. I remember, of course, when the new owners at Manchester City came in, Mark Hughes was given 6 months. So what happens, Alex?
The most important thing is to understand here is when the new owners have come in, there isn't actually a club there. When under the Mike Ashley reign, there was Lee Charney. That was it. There wasn't a board. There wasn't a director of football. There wasn't a football executive. There was nobody. It was Lee Charney. That was it. So these people, Amanda Staveley and her husband, Moran Gadusi, the Rubin brothers, have got to find somebody to do these jobs. Now, obviously, over the media, there's been so many people linked with it. Ivan Campo, the previous Monaco and Nice director of football, who did such a really great job over there. Really massive thing to defeat the PSG giants. Now would sell his soul to become the English giant. Yeah, it would be really... That's a story in itself. But they have to find people for these jobs. And what... You guys obviously know football as well as I do. You do not get a manager of the quality of people that we've been linked with without a director of football and a chief executive in place. You don't do that, because if these guys don't get on, then it's already causing tension behind the scenes, and you don't want that, a new football club with new owners. So I completely get it. Yes, he does deserve his 1,000th game. Arguably, if Mike Ashley hadn't sold the club and the takeover hadn't happened, Steve Bruce was massively under the firing line. We're second bottom. We haven't won a game all season. He's run 7 games out of his last 37. That is sackable form. It is sackable form. In a normal football club, he would have been sacked. But again, this is Newcastle United. It isn't. For me, it makes sense to either keep him, or obviously he's going to get his 1,000th game at Spurs this weekend, on Sunday, on Super Sunday, that were the second game there. And then obviously whatever happens there. But if it is Steve Bruce to the end of the season and he gets a £6 million payoff that's been reported in the Telegraph today by Luke Edwards, then that's fine. See you later, Steve. We don't have any angst against you. You don't hold us in any regards, the fans. That's fine. If you do sack Steve Bruce and you get someone like Eddie Howe in, again, give him £6 million to the end of the season. It keeps us up. Great. You get £6 million. We go down with a laughing stock because we're the richest club in the Championship. It's hilarious and it's amazing. But again, if you give Steve Bruce that 6 months like Mark Hughes had, do you give him £100 million to spend in January? Would you give Steve Bruce £100 million in January? I personally wouldn't. I'm really looking forward to Jared Bowen playing on the wing for Newcastle for the next 5 years and us costing £55 million or something daft like that because Steve Bruce saw a compilation video on YouTube and thought it was funny. I don't really understand, but... No, he shouldn't be replaced until there is a director of football in charge, a chief executive, and then Newcastle can do that. And obviously that could take months, could take weeks, could take days, We don't know how long or how quickly Amanda Staveley can move. And until that happens, Steve Bruce will most likely be in charge. And if not Steve Bruce, it'll be Graham Jones.
Very briefly, Alex, has Steve Bruce done a good job?
No.
Why?
Which one would you like? Would you like the seven wins out of the last 37, diversing a fan base into becoming the toxic atmosphere that Newcastle already was behind Mike Ashley? Mike Ashley found the perfect puppet figure to direct hatred away from him, and his name's Steve Bruce. Like, what, radicalising the media and having two media bans in there because he didn't like what Craig Hope wrote about him? Fighting one of the most senior players in Newcastle United, the Newcastle United squad, and Mike Ashley, and clashing with, Matt Ritchie, and clashing with him, making actual players that had potential worse, and no plan A, no plan B, and what is a plan C? And then bringing Graham Jones in to help with the coaching and actively getting angry at Graham Jones on the sideline whenever there is coaching actually being done. Take your pick of which one you would like of that reason.
Sorry to butt in, but one of the things that I think is, as so you're talking about there about Mike Ashley, Steve Bruce, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C, there never seemed to be a consistent plan. One of these things that I'm really interested about with the new owners coming in is, like you were saying, about setting up the right backroom with him. So they've promised to put £600 million worth of investment into, you know, this is stadium, this is training grounds, this is, you know, the local area. This is, like you've said, you know, bigger than massive for Newcastle, bigger than all of that. But I'm interested to see what this new plan is. What, you know, because we know they've got these massive, vast amounts of wealth, and we know, but I'm interested to see is how they actually go about doing it. Are they going to do, you know, the Man City of 2013, where you just go out and you just get, you know, Kun Aguero, Yaya Toure, but then you keep some stalwarts like Chiodi and Lescott? I think it's going to be really, really, really interesting just because they've got Spurs on Sunday. If there's a team that you want to get down at the moment with this, all of this roar going on behind him, you know, everybody buzzing, you know, it's going to be an atmosphere at St James Park like they probably haven't had for years. If they get a big result there, all of a sudden, things are looking very, very different for Steve Bruce. I mean, I know what we said about this, but do you think, Alex, that that's going to make any difference if they give, you know, give Spurs a walloping on Sunday? Do you think maybe you go, all right, Steve, here's a, you know, a cool 50. Go and see what you can do over January.
Yes, maybe, potentially. It depends on the Spurs result. Of course, it depends on every result for the next few games, I would suppose. Again, it doesn't matter. Nothing really matters because Steve Bruce is on borrowed time. Both of you have said this. This arranged marriage is coming to an end. About the atmosphere on Sunday, you might have seen on social media, a company called War Flags is coming back. They originally got banned a couple of years ago because they filled all four sides of St. James's Park with anti-Mike Ashley massive banners and flags that covered the sizes of stands. They've been told that they're allowed to come back, so St. James's Park will be covered in brilliant, massive, vibrant stuff. And it is a full house. The full away stand has gone, and obviously the full home support's there. Also, the fact that it's Spurs. Daniel Levy is one of the three main people that has said he is very anti this takeover. Daniel Levy, the Glaziers, and the Liverpool owners. Shock, they don't have a lot of money to invest. It's there. Shock, Spurs are almost £1 billion in debt and have got a stadium to pay for. Shock, they also wanted to do something that Will mentioned at the very, very top of this programme, the Super League. Shock, they didn't get their way. We got our way. I don't really understand which one it is. Has he had a pint of bitter there and there's a little bit left in it? Or what's going on? I'm not really understanding. But if we beat them, I will love it, to quote Kevin Keegan.
This is a very interesting conversation. I have to say, like I said, Alex, this would make... We could go on about Newcastle for hours, days even. This would make a special episode to talk about how the takeover connects with the Super League and the state of football at the moment. That'll be a good future episode for sure. Let's move on to other talking points in the Premier League. Of course, as you said, Newcastle play Spurs on Sunday. We have a new manager in charge. Well, I say a new manager, a familiar face. He's an Italian. He used to manage Chelsea. He did manage Fulham for a small time, for 17 games, I think. That was the season before Scott Parker was then brought in for Fulham, and unfortunately Fulham got relegated. That was in 2019. Claudio Ranieri is the new manager of Watford. And of course, we know what he has also done in his managerial career. 5,000-1 Leicester City title victory in 2016. That seems a long time ago now. Five years now. But Claudio Ranieri is at Watford. Ollie, the managerial merry-go-round goes on at Watford. I don't know how many managers this is now in how many years. I can never pronounce his name, but Isco Muniz. That's the manager who's departed. It seems brutal that Watford haven't started the season too bad. The manager who's gone got them up to the Premier League from the Championship the first time of asking. It seems brutal, but Ranieri's there now. What do you think he could bring to Watford?
Well, I mean, just touching on what you said there about what they've got this system, haven't they? Their board that they like. So this is, you know, their 13th manager since 2012. So they've got a system in place where they want to keep it. They want to keep it ridiculously fresh, apparently. They just want to keep bringing in every time that they have a slight dip, they get someone new and they'll get someone new. I do think it's really brutal, but I'm just not surprised. I'm just not even remotely surprised, because this is just Watford all over. This is how they run it. And I really like Ranieri, you know, mainly because of what happened in Leicester, but I'm a fan of him. So I'm personally glad to have him back in the press conferences and seeing what he's got to say. You know what you're going to get with a Ranieri side. You're going to be pretty solid at the back, and you're going to try and hit teams on the counter. And with Watford's team, with Sarr and players like that going forward, I think he could bring quite a lot, to be honest. That's nothing against their previous manager, because like you said, they've started well, but this is obviously a system that their board have in place where they want that. They want that new manager bounce every 6 months. They want to, you know, and that'll get them through 3 months. They might have a drop off after 3 months, but they're just going to keep bouncing along and bouncing along and bouncing along. And I'm excited to see. But I look at the bottom of that table and I think that they could definitely stay up. I think there's certainly, you know, Burnley, Norwich, Southampton. I'm far more worried about them than I am about Watford, having watched their first few games. Yeah.
Isco Muniz was actually a player when Ranieri was manager at Valencia. So that's kind of weird, I suppose, in a way. But Ranieri is the new manager, Alex. I thought about this the other day. He's 69 years old. He turns 70 soon. I think it's next week, actually. And I thought of a similar scenario where Crystal Palace experimented with Frank de Boer. He lasted about 4 or 5 games. Roy Hodgson was then the new manager. And Crystal Palace, he sort of brought Crystal Palace up a notch a little bit. They tend to stay in the Premier League season after season now. And we'll touch on Crystal Palace in a bit. But Ranieri is an old owl, old wise guy in the Premier League. Perhaps maybe that's the right fit, a bit of sustainability. But again, we talk about Watford, they sack managers left, right and centre. But this has surely got to be a manager that has to stay for quite a long time now.
You've said there, and I want to touch on your stat, which was absolutely brilliant, about the fact that one of their ex-managers was a player while Ranieri was there. It's only Ben Foster in the Watford squad that was born after Claudio Ranieri started coaching. So there you go. That's how experienced the man is. Watford also is his 20th club in his managerial career. So you talk about a merry-go-round. Claudio Ranieri is the owner of it. I'll tell you that for free. But when you're looking at the sustainability factor and why Watford have really signed him and brought him in, is because of what he did at Sampdoria over in Italy. They were a small, really small club, like the similar size of Watford are now, that were on the verge of relegation. Ranieri was brought in. He stabilised them. He made them finish 16th that season. big news over in Serie A. The next season, they finished 11th. Watford, if they can have that, oh my God, what are we talking about? That's absolutely amazing for a club of that stature and size. Two seasons solid in the Premier League. You've got that money. You've bought off all the debts. You've maybe invested a solid amount in there. You've got a decent squad. Bring in a manager that can take you to that next level. That is what Ranieri is. And you mentioned Crystal Palace. That's a perfect comparison. Although I think when we move on to them, I'll tell you how I think Patrick Vieira is actually going to aggress them and they're probably going to go down. But never mind. We'll move on.
Well, right on cue, Alex. We're going to move on to Crystal Palace, because Monday night football, Patrick Vieira's first time as a manager comes up against Arsenal, of course, one of his former clubs. Ollie, I suppose if you're a Crystal Palace fan, you might think that we haven't had a terrible start. We've had a decent start. We've beaten Spurs 3-0. But against Brighton, they were in front and they conceded very, very late. That's a bit of a sucker punch of a result. What have you made of Palace so far this season?
To be honest, so I've just one thing I'm going to touch on very briefly is I went to the Emirates on that day when they stuffed Palace. And obviously we were watching that game in a pub, and obviously it was Spurs and Vieira. So it was a bit of a perfect storm. And the Vieira chants were going all around us. We were going into the stadium, and obviously he still loved there. So I've got a feeling, especially what Arsenal, I've got a feeling he's going to get, you know, I know this isn't what you asked, but I've got a feeling he's going to get an incredibly warm reception when he first gets there. I think he's going to, you know, be heralded as a bit of a hero. But in terms of how they've started, I've been really impressed with Palace. I think I haven't spotted loads of Vieira's, you know, tactically. I haven't really seen loads change from Roy. But what I do think is massive in their parts is that they've done some really seriously good recruitment. I think Mark Gay, obviously, I'm biased here, but he was Swansea's best player in the season where we were nearly in the playoffs. And he was, you know, a seriously, seriously talented youngster. Obviously came another one out of the Chelsea Academy. So I think he's massive for them. Conor Gallagher is another one that they've added in the middle. And I think how they've managed to hold on to Wilfred, you know, for me, Wilfred Zaha's maybe not the best winger in the league, but I think he's certainly up there. I think that they've stolen, you know, I think that is some of their best business of the last 10 years is keeping hold of him. So, to be honest, I'm interested to see, as the season progresses, how Vieira keeps, you know, whether he changes anything or whether they continue to sort of play in a similar style. I've got hope for Palace. I think they're way, way above in terms of the quality of players that they've got. I think they're going to be quite a way out of that drop zone for me. Interesting game against Arsenal. Obviously, we know what Arsenal are like. It's at the Emirates, isn't it? So, yeah, I'm interested to see how this one goes, because we know what Arsenal can be like. You know, on their day against Spurs, I thought they were really good. When Saka and Smith Rowe have got their tails up, I think that they're a force for any defence. But yeah,
Alex, the only teams that Crystal Palace have really suffered really bad defeats, both 3-0, have been Chelsea and Liverpool. Home games, they're doing quite well. They're beating Spurs, obviously. Couldn't beat Brighton. Obviously, as I said, it's a sucker punch of a game. But when they were playing Leicester at home, they did come back from 2 goals down. So there is a little bit of a fight within this squad. That they've got a bit of character about them. But Arsenal, obviously, with Vieira, this upcoming game, that's a big test to see how far they come since the start of the season, don't you think?
Yeah, I perfectly expect Arsenal to do them. Very simple, Arsenal will beat them. Crystal Palace won't be enough for Arsenal's good side. Arsenal do have a very good side. Yes, they've started weird this season as Mikel Arteta tries and installs his actual system, but no, I think Saka and Smith Rowe are incredible. We might be able to see Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang actually catch a little bit of form this season. might be able to catch a little bit of form. But at the beginning of the season, on many other forms of everywhere, I predicted Palace to go down. I still will stick with it. I don't trust Patrick Vieira. I don't. I think, yes, they're riding high on good results at the moment, but I think if they go on a torrid run, that could be wheels off and it completely fall out. Also, as Ozoli said, with Wilfried Zaha, if he gets injured, that's it. Then I can't see where else goals are coming from, unless you're expecting Christian Benteke to capture form from six seasons ago and score 15 goals for you, or the main man that still steals a living in IU. I don't actually imagine it. You'll be able to tell us more, Ollie. Crystal Palace signed the wrong IU. Andre IU's the good one. Jordan isn't.
No, I can't. I cannot agree with that more, to be honest. I can't agree with when he again, I keep plugging the Swans in, but you look at all these Premier League sides and they're just littered with ex-Swansea players. But he's absolutely one that I see him on that pitch. And I've got a really good friend that's a Palace fan. And he's just, when he sees him play, it's just his off-the-ball work just isn't there. And when you give him the ball, he doesn't know how to keep hold of it quite a lot. One player that I think is really important for them is Edwards, again, my mate that goes down. He's started, and he's another one of these youngsters that I feel that they've got. I think they've got, and I know what Alex is saying, and I do think, I will say, I think I can agree with that, because like I've been saying as well, they're a young squad. So how, when the going gets tough, I'm interested to see how it's going to go. But I do think that they've got quality.
Okay, one final point I will make about Palace, and Ollie touched on it, with some of the players. Like you said, if Wilfried Zaha gets injured, that's a blow. One player who hasn't played so far, has been signed from Watford in August, is Will Hughes. Where's he? Why is he not playing? So there's got to be a question there, Alex. Does that sums up your argument that why you think Palace might be in a precarious position of being in the relegation zone come the end of the season? He's not using all his players in the right way. Well, why is he not starting Will Hughes? Is that a fair argument to make?
Yes and no. Obviously, you buy a player, you expect him to probably play if you're a Crystal Palace fan. But when Will Hughes was bought from Watford, everyone kind of scratched their head and went, why have they bought him? They don't actually really need him unless Keate gets injured or Conor Gallagher gets injured. Hang on a minute. Neither of them are injured. Both of them are playing. Both of them are playing really well. So Will Hughes, sorry, pal, you're just going to be making a really good living sitting on Crystal Palace's bench. It doesn't matter. That's it. At the moment, they have got two really good midfielders that are playing absolute great football. Conor Gallagher, as Ollie's already mentioned, is a baller. Yes, he's only on loan, but he is a baller. Keate as well, a baller. Both of them are too good to be in Crystal Palace's team. That's my opinion. But that's why Will Hughes isn't playing, probably, is because both of them are really good footballers.
I suppose it comes down to whether he has too many midfielders. That could be a point well made. Let's round off this episode. There's lots of things we could talk about, because, of course, the Premier League is the Premier League. Watford v Liverpool is this weekend. As we've already touched on, Newcastle playing Spurs, of course. Another game which will be interesting, of course, is Leicester v Man United. That's probably a club which Leicester can sometimes cause the big six, or so-called big six now, some slip-ups. Manchester City play Burnley. Burnley will be hoping that they don't get beat 5-0 again, because they seem to always get beat 5-0 when they go to City. Norwich play Brighton. Southampton play Leeds. West London derby's in Brentford and Chelsea. That's going to be a really interesting one. See, if Brentford held Liverpool 3-3, they've already beaten Arsenal. Could Chelsea possibly slip up at Brentford? We've mentioned Arsenal against Crystal Palace on Monday night. Everton v West Ham. David Moyes, of course, that's another former club for him. We have touched on West Ham in previous episodes, where the West Ham could actually force their way into the top five. There's no reason why they can't. But Aston Villa v Wolves is one game. But Ollie, you said one of your family members is a Wolves fan.
Your dad
is a Wolves fan.
Yeah, big Wolves fan, yeah. and of all the derbies, this is the one for him. Obviously, the West Brom is
obviously, you know, everyone sort of thinks that, but he's got more memories of getting beat by Villa than everyone else. So when that Villa, when it's Villa, he flickers. You can see it in his eyes. There's just a little something different about Villa. And I don't know why. And then obviously, it's been charged with 3 years ago when we were both of those teams were down. I think it was West Brom were the only team in the Premier League, and then it was Villa and Wolves were the only two teams in the Championship. And they were, I went to one of those where Diogo Jota scored a winner. And I have not been to a derby that charged. You know, obviously we talk about Cardiff, Swansea, another one that's in the chip, but like, yeah, I honestly, looking at the moment, I really think it could, because Villa in their last game definitely should have got a result against Spurs. So they're going to be frustrated with that. And Wolves were really good at the start of the season. Obviously, new manager come in and it was, didn't start brilliantly, but the signs were there. They're playing well. And one of the biggest things, obviously, we had Raul back, and Wolves had Raul back. And it just looks like, you know, for me, he's one of the top, on his day, he's one of the top strikers in the Premier League. And he looks like I think the biggest thing for him after going through an injury like that is getting your confidence back, you know. And it looks like he's getting his confidence back. And it's the same thing that they used to have with Diogo. As long as the defence is set, you know, you give Raul and Heechee was playing really, really well last game against, he scored two against Newcastle, actually. And so if those two can click, I think that they're going to cause that Villa back four a lot of trouble. But then again, you know, Villa have been looking good this year.
Although, to point out, 7 games played, they've only scored 5 goals. That's got to be a little bit of a worry, especially we've spoken about Crystal Palace in terms of losing Zaha. If Wolves lost Jimenez, which they had last season, they didn't have him for the majority of the season. That's got to be a little bit of a concern in terms of goals.
Well, this is the eternal thing of where are these, because that's always been but we've got, I think you look at the Wolves defence and you look at the midfield, you know, I think João Moutinho and Ruben Neves are two brilliant holding midfielders. So they give a lot of protection to the back four. But it is that thing of where are the goals can come from. And obviously we've swapped Nuno, and Nuno was a very defensive minded manager. And now we've got, give me one second because his name goes from my head. Bruno, he's like one of my bogey names.
Bruno Lage.
I'm really sorry. He's like a bogey name for me. Bruno Lage is coming, and you could immediately tell from the first few games it was slightly different, but I still think he's got that defensive base to build on. And I think if you can get Heechee, looked really good last year, and he looked like a very good player for the Premier League. He's powerful. He gets forward. He's quick. He proved that he could finish on the weekends. So I think, although we haven't started, you know, like you were saying, there hasn't been loads of goals. I do think that was, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say it was unlucky, but I think we were hard done to have only scored 5 so far this season. I think if you know, we could have had a few more goals. So I'm not that worried, to be totally honest with you, Will.
Only one of 2 sides so far to have not drawn a game as well. So that's an interesting statistic as well. Alex, where do you see Wolves this season at the moment? How they've started so far? Where do you think they could be? Closest to the relegation zone, or where they were the first season back a couple of years ago under Nuno? They finished, I think, was it 8th or 9th, something like that?
Eighth was there. Realistically, where Wolves finished last season is where they'll probably finish this season, 13th. I completely agree with Ollie. Any statistic you have on Wolverhampton Wanderers this season, rip it up. Get rid of it. It's ridiculous. Their season is crazy. They've got the most dribbles completed in the Premier League. Adama Traore is a madman. They have the 3rd most chances created in the entire Premier League. That's above Chelsea. That's above Man United. That's only below Liverpool and Manchester City. The 3rd most chances created. The 4th most shots in the league. And they've only scored 5 goals. They're crazy. Their statistics do not match up. If you have any stats on Wolves, rip them up. The only one to be actual careful about this season, and for this game in particular, is these two teams are the two most internationally affected sides in the Premier League. Wolves have 14 players on international duty. Aston Villa have 12. That's a lot of players, right? For anyone. That's pretty much half your squad that have gone out on international duty. That's half your squad that are tired. Half your squad that are getting on the Thursday that we're recording this podcast. They're back there now. That's it. You've got Friday training. Saturday, you're playing a game. That's, boom, you're knackered. So, yes, really, really rip it up. But again, I'm with you, Raul Jimenez, getting back to form. He's not really been a striker, a goal scorer this season because he's lost that little bit of edge because he's trying to find his full fitness. So in his position, he is the fourth most chance creator in the Premier League. He's creating chances for other people. It's just a shame Adama Traore can't finish and Hui-Chan wasn't starting the first two games of the season. Now he is. He's got three goals in two games and he's looking really, really good, as Ollie said. Adama Traore not finishing his chances is still a major problem for Wolves, but it has been his entire Wolverhampton Wanderers career. So yeah, we laugh about it.
You know what? I almost, and I know this is just, I'm glad Bruno Lage doesn't think like this, but I'd play Adama for the hell of it. He's the most fun player to watch in the Premier League. He's like watching a kid playing football against a load of 13-year-olds. And I honest to God, when you see him in the flesh, it's just a sight to buy. You just stand there and you go, I don't know what to make of this. I don't know how you try and stop him. It's like at school in the playground where a year 11 joins him and he can just blitz around the whole team but can't finish.
It is completely scary. I was at the Wolves game where we got beat 2-1. I was there and to see both him and Alan Saint-Maximin in the fresh, both of them running at each other. It was unbelievable. I've seen Alan Saint-Maximin a couple of times this season already, being a Newcastle fan, but that was incredible. Both of them running at each other, and obviously the dribbling statistics of Adama Traore this season are nuts. He's on about shattering his own record of most dribbles completed in the Premier League, and it's literally only October, so it's incredible. He's really, really great. He just can't finish for Toffee.
Yeah. It is the eternal thing. I just want to pop a little microphone in there and just at some point go, right, now pass, get rid of the ball. Because when you see him line up, it's the groan around the mole. When you see him line, you're going like, oh, amazing, Adama. Oh, no, don't shoot. Oh, he's shot. Well, that's unlucky, Adama. And you just give him a little, that's unlucky, hey, mate. Don't worry about it.
Aston Villa Wolves score prediction.
I'm going to get 2-0 Wolves.
Solid. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you to both of you for joining me on another episode of the All Out Football podcast. Really enjoyable. Thanks to Alex and to Ollie. And I'm going to leave this episode of the podcast with some sad news this week that the Wales and the Bournemouth midfielder David Brooks has revealed that he has been diagnosed with cancer. He is 24 years of age. Stage 2 Hodgkin lymphoma. It's the prognosis, he said, is a positive one, and he will be starting treatment very, very soon. So we wish him all the best. He's a very talented player for Bournemouth in the Championship. So we wish David Brooks all the best in his cancer treatment. That's the end of this All Out Football podcast. Don't forget, All Out Football is a football website specialising in opinion-based articles written by football fans across the country. Don't forget to get involved, get heard. This is the All Out Football podcast. Thank you to my guests. Thank you for listening. And don't forget to listen to the next episode of the All Out Football podcast.